The applause starts before the door is even open. It sounds bright, almost joyful, but it hits the room like a fire drill. Hands clap because they have to. Smiles rise because they are watched. The newly married couple step into the office with fresh tans and matching rings. They laugh, they wave, they move through the aisle like a parade. One of them carries a bakery box with cupcakes for the team. The other holds a paper bag with small souvenirs. The room smells like stale coffee and frosting. Near the back, the people who covered their shifts watch in silence. The ex has a knot in the stomach that will not loosen. The older worker leans on a desk and reads the room instead of the cake. By the end of the day, one of those smiling faces will be promoted over everyone. The wedding will not be a celebration. It will be the fault line. Chapter 1, The Welcome Back. The balloons should have been taken down weeks ago. Thin silver strings hang from the low ceiling, drifting near old tape marks and yellowed corners. Someone left the banner that says congratulations in peeling letters above an empty workstation. Dust clings to the edges of the paper where the air conditioning unit pushes lukewarm air across the floor. Tara drops her bag under her chair and looks at the mess. She was the one who stayed late to finish the end-of-month reports while the happy couple flew out. She worked through two Saturdays to cover client calls. The banner still hanging feels like a joke told at her expense. She opens her inbox and watches the new messages stack up. Missed calls, requests, one passive note about minor errors in last week's files. She can already hear the talk in the hallway. They are almost here. People keep glancing at the clock, even though the exact time was never sent. By 9:30, the office feels smaller. Chairs scrape, drawers open and close. Phones rest in palms instead of on the desk. A few workers drift toward the break room with the same slow shuffle, searching for coffee and an excuse to stand near the entrance. Ricardo is already there, leaning on the counter. He scrolls through old wedding photos on his phone, the ones he should have deleted months ago, before the engagement, before the save the date, before he realized he had never been part of the future plan at all. On the screen, he sees her face again. Sarah in a simple dress at a staff barbecue, long before the white gown in the aisle. She is laughing at something he said. He kills the screen with a thumb and reaches for the coffee pot. The break room door swings open and Malik steps in. He has 25 years in the building and a back that complains every time he bends to the lowest file drawer. He takes in the cluster of people around the window without saying a word. "They reach yet?" someone asks. "Car park still empty." Another voice answers, "Must be running late, honeymoon jet lag and all that." The words have a hard edge, even though they sound light. No one laughs. They sip old coffee and stare at the frosted glass door that leads to the hallway. A younger clerk pushes her phone toward the center of the table. Wedding photos glow on the screen. The beach, the dance floor, the slow walk up the aisle. Sarah and Daniel, wrapped around each other in every frame, a white dress, a fitted suit, fireworks in the night sky. "Look at that cake," the clerk says. They did not hold back. Ricardo tries not to, but his eyes find the screen. One photo catches him. Sarah on the dance floor, smiling into the lens, the new ring lifted toward the camera. Daniel stands behind her with one hand on her waist and one arm thrown up in celebration. It is the same hand that used to rest on Ricardo's shoulder during late shifts when they were the ones closing down the office. He sets the coffee cup down before his grip betrays him. "Nice for some," Malik says. His voice is calm. His eyes are not. "Hope they remember who did the work while they were busy cutting cake." The room goes quiet. Then the noise from the hallway swells. A voice at the front desk calls out. The outer door opens. Laughter spills inside along with the sound of rolling luggage wheels on tile. "They are here," someone says. The staff drift back to their stations like a tide pulled by an unseen moon. Chairs roll. Screens wake. A thin line of people forms along the center aisle where the couple will walk. No one was told to do this. It just happens. The door swings wide. Sarah steps in first in a bright blouse and a skirt that looks too light for the dull office light. Her hair is still styled in soft waves from the photos. Daniel follows, hand on the handle of a small suitcase, suit jacket open, tie loose, grin wide. The applause crashes over them. It sounds full, but anyone listening close can hear the gaps where hands never touch. They move down the aisle, thanking everyone, hugging a few, touching shoulders, and shaking hands. Tara, Sarah says as she reaches her desk, "You are a lifesaver. We saw the numbers from last week. You held everything." Tara forces a smile. "Part of the job." "We brought you something," Daniel adds. He digs in the paper bag and pulls out a small keychain from a resort gift shop. Sand trapped in plastic, shaped like a tiny bottle. "Nice," Tara says. She sets it on the desk beside a stack of unpaid overtime forms. The cupcakes are opened in the break room. Frosting smears onto napkins. Phones come out again, this time for group pictures. People crowd around the happy couple, pulled in by habit and the need to be seen. No one wants to be the one standing apart in the frame. From his station near the back, Ricardo watches. He turns his chair just enough to avoid a direct line of sight, but his ears catch every laugh. His inbox fills with new tasks, many of them corrections to files he rushed in the weeks before. Mullick walks past and gives him a nod. "You all right there?" "Fine," Ricardo says, "just catching up." "Careful with that," Mullick says. "Catch up too much. They will think you like carrying extra weight." The morning stretches. By lunch, the sugar high from the cupcakes has faded and the usual sounds of work return. Printers run, phones ring. The couple settle in at their joined desks, trading looks and small touches that they pretend are subtle. At 3 p.m, an email hits every inbox at once. "Mandatory staff meeting. Today, 4:30 p.m., main conference room, attendance required." The subject line is from upper management. No reason given. Whispers start again. Meetings are rare. Last-minute meetings are worse. Some people joke about budget cuts. Others talk about new targets. Someone suggests that it is just a welcome back session, a chance for the bosses to smile for the photos. Tara reads the email twice and feels a tightness in her chest. Her timesheet is not resolved. Her overtime is still pending. She wonders if this is where they announce a new way to measure performance that will make those extra hours look like wasted effort. At 4:25, people stream toward the conference room. The air feels warmer inside, bodies packed into the narrow space. Plastic chairs scrape on the floor as everyone tries to find a spot where they can see the front without being too close to the managers. Sarah and Daniel sit near the front, side by side. Their hands rest on their knees, rings catching the fluorescent light. They look proud but a little nervous. They traded private jokes in the hallway on the way in. Now they sit straighter. The director walks in with a folder under one arm. The HR officer follows with a tablet. Both of them smile in that slow, careful way that means nothing good is coming. "Thank you for joining on short notice," the director says. "We wanted to celebrate the return of two valued members of our team and share an important update about our structure." Tara stares at the folder. Ricardo stares at the table. Mullick watches the faces in the crowd. "Our department has grown," the director continues. "With that growth, we need stronger leadership around scheduling, performance reviews, and overtime allocation. After careful consideration, we have decided to create a new supervisory role." He turns toward the front row. "I am pleased to announce that Daniel will be stepping into this position, effective immediately." Applause rises again, louder this time, sharp and automatic. Some faces are turned to the front, others are turned away. A few hands do not move at all. Daniel stands flushed, trying to look humble and ready at the same time. Sarah beams beside him. The HR officer watches the room over the top of the tablet, eyes moving from one cluster of workers to another. Tara feels the air leave her lungs. Ricardo grips the edge of his chair. Mullick closes his eyes for a brief second. From that moment on, every shift, every overtime slot, every evaluation will pass through the hands of one half of the happy couple. And everyone in the room understands that the real honeymoon has only just begun. Chapter 2, The Shift. The new schedule board goes up on a Wednesday morning. No announcement, no warning. Someone just slides it onto the wall near the copier before the first coffee finishes brewing. Fresh columns, fresh colors, fresh cuts. Tara sees it first. Her name sits under a new shift that kills the fragile balance she fought for all year. She had begged for steady hours. She earned them by covering the wedding gap. Now they are gone. Just moved without a single conversation. She stands there with her hand on the board, reading the lines twice. No one speaks, but bodies collect behind her. A soft wave of breathing fills the hallway. Names shuffled, days switched, lunch hours reduced, friends of the couple given clean runs with no closing duties, critics buried at the bottom. Malik steps up beside her. Here it starts. Maybe it is a mix-up, she says. He gives her a long look. No mix-ups in this place, only choices. A few feet away, Sarah walks past with a smile that comes too quickly. She bumps Tara's arm lightly. If anything looks off, talk to Daniel. He is just tightening things. New role, new duties, you know how it is. The words land soft, but not the meaning. By 10, half the office has memorized the board. People whisper in doorways. Supervisors glance down the hall like they can feel the resentment, but cannot name it. The couple sit at their shared desk and adjust their tone depending on who walks by. Ricardo stared at his square on the grid for 5 minutes before moving. Two late shifts added. One weekend stripped. A scattered pattern meant to break rhythm. When he steps away, the old anger grows in his chest. He left the past alone. He never said a word after the wedding. Now the past is being used to shape his work week. Near noon, a message comes through the internal chat system. It is a private note from Daniel. Stop bringing up old things. The team needs to move forward. If you want clean evaluations, keep the past out of the workplace. Ricardo stares at the screen, jaw tight. He never brought anything up. Not once. The guilt he never asked for is being pinned to him anyway. He closes the chat window and wipes his palms on his pants. At lunch, the break room is quiet, not the normal quiet, a heavy quiet. Forks push through cheap food containers without appetite. Phones stay face down. Even the fridge hum sounds louder than usual. Then the rumor hits. Someone saw an email, someone heard a joke, someone caught a screenshot before it vanished. Within minutes, a small trusted circle forms near the back tables. One worker pulls out their phone. The screen glows with a grainy image, a message thread. Names visible, the couple's names, sent late at night. One line stands out. We should teach a few of them a lesson. Make it clear who is on our side. Another line from the other spouse. Start with the ones who made the honeymoon so hard to cover. Tara's stomach turns. Malik closes his fist. Ricardo looks away before he can see the replies. Who sent this to you? Tara asks. Anonymous drop, the worker says. Came from a number I do not know. Could be fake. Could be, the worker answers, but the tone sounds real. The room holds that silence, the kind that reveals fear more than anger. At 2, the staff meeting begins. Small room, bad chairs, a projector that never focuses right. Daniel sits at the front now, not beside the rest of the team. He holds a clipboard, like he has been doing it for years. Metrics come up first. Numbers broken into sections, delays, errors, missed calls, lateness. The data is not new, but the way it is shown is. Names appear under each column, only some names. Tara sees her own under delayed responses. 2 entries from the weeks she carried everything alone. No context, no credit, just her name under a red highlight. Ricardo's name is under errors. The mistakes were minor and fixed months ago. They return now as fresh evidence. The room does not breathe. The couple exchange small looks. The director watches with a faint nod, like this is the discipline the team has always needed. When the projector shuts down, Daniel clears his throat. We are building a stronger structure. That means accountability. Everyone starts fresh today. You give respect, you get respect. It is the kind of line that lands two ways, depending on where you stand. The meeting ends. Chairs scrape. The staff move out in tight lines. No one speaks above a whisper. Eyes track each other. Trust is thinning by the hour. By late afternoon, one worker makes a quiet walk to HR. Not a complaint. Not yet. Just a conversation. A feeler. They sit in a small room with a borrowed chair and a thin desk. The HR officer takes notes without expression. If you choose to open a formal investigation, you will need documented evidence. Dates, communications, witness statements. The worker swallows. And if I do not, HR smiles, the kind of smile meant to calm but failing. Then be patient. Culture shifts take time. The worker leaves with nothing but a knot in the chest. HR did not promise protection. HR did not deny favoritism either. HR stayed in the middle, which is where people get hurt the easiest. As the day closes, the lights stay harsh. The team moves slower. The couple pack up and leave together, laughing down the hallway, shadows stretching behind them. Inside the office, no one laughs. The shift is complete, power has changed hands, pressure has a name, and everyone feels what is coming. Chapter 3, The Break. The complaint lands on HR's desk at 9:20 a.m. on a Monday. Not a whisper, not a warning, a full written report with signatures from multiple workers. Dates, screenshots, shiftboard comparisons, notes about the private messages. It is not one story. It is a wall of pressure built over weeks. The HR officer reads it twice. The director is called in. Doors close. The office feels like a held breath. Workers move around the floor without speaking unless someone is watching. Phones stay unlocked longer than usual as people scroll through old messages wondering what will be asked next. By 10, HR begins pulling people into small meeting rooms one at a time. The questions come slow and clean. Did you receive this message? Did you hear this remark? When were these shifts changed? What did the supervisor say in that moment? No raised voices, no anger, just steady, quiet precision. Tara sits in the first chair. Her hands fold tight in her lap. She explains the shift changes, the sudden loss of hours, the note in the meeting about delays, the cupcakes, the smiles, the pressure that wrapped around every task. Did they threaten you? HR asks. No, she says, not directly. Did it feel like punishment? Yes, the HR officer nods. No expression, no hint of direction. Ricardo goes next. His voice is flat. He talks about the past he never brought up, the message he received warning him to stop talking about things he never said. He pushes the printed screenshot across the table. It slides to the center like evidence in a courtroom. We cannot verify the origin of this thread, HR says. You can verify the tone, he replies. Malik steps in afterward. 25 years in the building, and he looks tired in a way he never did before. He talks about the culture, the favoritism, how one small shift can become a knife if someone sharpens it long enough. Do you think the supervisor is abusing authority? HR asks. I think they are using it exactly how they want to, he answers. By noon, the couple is called in. Two chairs, one table, HR on one side, the couple on the other. They sit close, legs almost touching, rings bright under the overhead light. Daniel explains the shift changes as operational needs. Performance corrections as standard procedure. The late night messages as jokes taken out of context. The warning to Ricardo as a misunderstanding between adults. Sarah nods at every line. She smiles when HR looks her way. Her voice stays steady. She says no one was targeted. The honeymoon chatter never influenced work. The screenshots are edited or incomplete. We run a fair office, she says. We just expect accountability. When the couple leaves the room, HR keeps their faces unreadable. Mid-afternoon brings the turn. A worker knocks on HR's door and closes it behind them. They look shaken. Their hands tremble around their phone. They sit without waiting to be told to sit. I recorded something, they say. I was not trying to trap anyone. I just heard them arguing near the hallway. HR asks, the couple. The worker taps their phone. The audio plays through small speakers. The hallway echo distorts the edges, but the voices are clear enough. One voice says, HR will not do anything. They never do. Worst case, we clean house after this and start fresh. The other voice answers, good. We do not need people here who could not even back the wedding. The recording lasts less than 20 seconds, but it is enough. HR asks for a copy. The worker sends it. The phone buzzes with the transfer. By 4, the director and HR call for a final meeting. Not a full staff meeting, only the ones involved. The air turns thick as each person walks in. Tara sits on the left, Ricardo sits near the window, Malik stands in the back. The couple sits together again, hands clasped now instead of resting on knees. The director speaks first. We conducted a review of recent workplace concerns. Faces stay still, no one looks down. Based on the findings, the director continues, we have decided to adjust the supervisory structure. Effective immediately, Daniel will be removed from the scheduling and performance oversight role. A temporary supervisor from another branch will step in until we complete a restructuring. Sarah turns toward Daniel. Her jaw tightens, but she stays quiet. Daniel nods, but his eyes burn. We also found communication that does not align with our expectations, HR adds. We will be addressing that internally. The meeting ends. No applause, no congratulations. Just the sound of chairs moving across tile and people stepping out into a hallway that feels too narrow for what has happened. Aftermath spreads fast. One worker resigns by the end of the week. No letter, just a signed form and a box filled with personal items. A Another stops talking during breaks, choosing silence over the risk of saying the wrong thing. Tara gets her stable shift back, but the damage is already anchored. The room feels colder, the air heavier. People avoid eye contact even when they stand side by side at the copier. Ricardo packs his bag one evening and pauses at the doorway. He looks back at the rows of desks, the couple sitting far apart now, HR walking the hall twice a day, workers who used to joke now acting like strangers. Malik shuts off the last light and locks the door. He shakes his head once. All this over a wedding. Ricardo nods. Two people promised each other a future. They never said who would pay for it. The office stays quiet long after they leave. The celebration is over. The war ended without a winner, and the workplace they once knew will not return.